Hi, my name is Eric Forrest, and welcome to the Whiteboard Podcast. Whiteboard is a podcast that invites recent design grads to be candid with faculty on their time as a student. These are the conversations that profs and students should have but can't, exploring the intersecting needs of students, faculty, the education system, and the job market as a whole. Welcome to the Whiteboard Podcast. Today I'm lucky to be joined by Gabriel Aldaba. Gabe is a graphic designer, art director, and web designer. He is a visionary editorial and commercial photographer based in Toronto, Canada. Most of his clients are in the music and the streetwear industry. You can check out his work at basedgabes.com, basedgabes.com. Welcome to the podcast, Gabe.
Where are you now?
I'm at my house.
School-wise.
Oh, I'm at Humber, and I'm at Seneca.
Oh, I saw that you're at OCAD. I thought you were at OCAD.
No, that's where I graduated from.
Oh, right, right. Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's OCAD is...
Rate it. Rate the experience.
Oh, man. Okay. Oh, man. Okay. Yeah, this podcast is supposed to be about you. I mean, I you know what? Actually, no, it's about recent graduates, and I am a recent graduate.
Exactly.
OCAD, the program I was in, you know, the nicest thing I've ever heard anyone say about it, that I agree with, is it's what you make of it. Right. But, like, that's, like, literally all of life. Like, that's random chance is what you make of it, right? So it's not really high praise. Mm. That's my answer.
what would you say experiencing Humber and OCAD, like, you could go back, I know times are different now, but if you were a student now, like,
where would I go?
Is it fair to make this judgment, even though you studied there like a long time ago
at Humber?
No, at OCAD.
Oh, okay. So I graduated from OCAD 2 years ago for my master's degree.
Oh,
but I did the same program you did in college 10 years ago.
No way.
Oh, yeah. Wow. You know, I can't complain about what I learned in that program. Mm-hmm. And like the people who were there, I like a lot of memorable instructors, Catherine Pike, Roger Hathaway, Kevin Brandon. Yeah. Just great people. And I like when I saw them, I was like, I saw them on campus when I started teaching, and Kevin just looked at me and said, he didn't remember my name, but he knew me. So he just said, welcome back. And I said, thank you. And then Catherine was like, I'm so happy to see you. And I was like, thank you.
How different are they coming from like a university and like design and the arts?
What do you mean?
How do they do things in a university level for our industry?
Mm.
Right. Like, is there a lot of theory stuff?
No, it's a good question, because I took the master's degree I took was master's degree is different because you're not learning it. Well, you're learning, but you're supposed to be creating new knowledge. So you're not, it's not software. It's not textbooks. It's like what's going on in the world and like, how do you want to create something new in the world? It's usually research or something. So in my case, I looked at inclusive forms of graphic design education. So like if someone's blind, how can they learn about design? Because all of design or too much of design education is visually focused. So the consequences of that is, especially with graphic design, obviously everything we make is inaccessible to blind people. Right. And so how can we get blind people involved in the design process? And to me, that usually starts with education, right? That's one possible pathway. So I found these people who are woodworkers, but they're blind. And I looked at, you know, could woodworking be a form of design education? That could be something in schools that you could sign up for and you could get a degree as a blind person in design through woodworking. Mm-hmm. So that's what my master's, that was my contribution to new knowledge. But I have the same question as you. What the hell are you doing for 4 years studying graphic design? Like in school, right? Like, what are you doing?
Right.
Is there really that much value?
Are you saying that the 2-year program that we did was better?
Well, what do you think?
I think it's a little cramped up.
Okay.
I don't know if that was just me being overwhelmed with like my first college experience, but okay. The transition was definitely, it was a lot of work for 2 years, for 4 semesters at least.
So do you feel, so it was cramped. Do you feel when you left that you were not prepared or could have been better prepared?
The only thing I could say was, I guess, better preparation for job hunting. And like, I know we didn't really get to, like, for my batch at least, because coronavirus. So we never got that end of year showing and all that. So I wish that there was a little bit more support. I know this is new, but even if the coronavirus didn't happen, like, I was still unaware of, like, how the job market was and the search and, you know, like, just what it's like working in the field. Like, I know school is nowhere close to the real working world, but, you know, I wanted more like a taste of the real world. But that's just how I saw it. But I don't know if what you guys were giving us were like real world stuff, but, you know, that's up, you have to like answer that for me.
What do you mean by real world?
Like, you know, like what it's like to work in design industry, like how to find a job, how to keep the job, what you need to do, all the sectors of design that's out there, all the differences between a boutique agency and a corporate ad agency, like the big ones, and also just like the knowledge of like, you know, like places. Like all I've heard throughout my 2 years there was Cosette, Taxi, and, you know, the major, the big agencies, but not any of like the small boutique ones, maybe like a smaller one, but I'm not really equipped with like the knowledge and like, you know, connections for that. So I'm trying to figure that out on my own for now. Yeah.
So did you find an internship?
I did, but my internship was, it wasn't the what I intended it to be in terms of like where I wanted to do it. So that's one thing I regret, not doing it at like a design agency or anything, because I did my internship at a store, which is nowhere close to like, you know, how an agency works. So kind of had to, yeah, it was a last minute thing. I didn't really,
what was that like?
It was laid back, a lot more chill, but I didn't want that. I wanted, you know, a taste of like what it's like to be in the industry. So it's like I wanted to know the process and like, you know, all the different things that one must do in an agency.
What kind of work were you doing?
I was doing mostly website work, e-commerce work, you know, ads.
Right.
I got a lot of freedom. It was a fairly young company, so everything was trusted to me.
Okay.
It has its pros and cons, obviously. Like, pros being I could do whatever I want and like what I think is best, but the cons is there's no real direction. So it was like, it was just another like project for me. It wasn't like a learning experience, you know what I mean? Because that's what I was looking for like the internship, was like a learning experience and get a taste of what the design industry here is.
Yeah, that's kind of so I actually also I've worked for a small agency, actually.
Right.
And I've worked as a freelancer for agencies. But I also never had that, like, you know, that sort of, like, I don't know what people think of, but I'm thinking, like, there's a ping pong table and a beer fridge and an art director who wears funny ties and wears his pants high so you can see his wild socks all the time. And,
yeah,
you know, and then he's got suspenders, like, that kind of thing. And there's drafting tables and rows of Apple products, like, as far as the eye can see. I also never had that experience, and like sometimes I'm like, you know, I wish I did, but also I'm just kind of like, well, I didn't have it. So after your internship, what happened?
Nothing. No, I was just graduated. Coronavirus is still at large, so
right,
couldn't really, like, I could have freelance, but I don't know. I don't know why I didn't. I just didn't want to. I just, I was longing for like a job, and I still am.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how.
You were saying like you just really want to get your hands dirty, yeah, be fully immersed. I was just talking to another graduate, Humber graduate, actually from your cohort, and he just took a job doing, sounds like kind of like what you're doing. Someone needs their Shopify template, like basically redone. They need all the new photos and everything as a freelance contract.
Also, that should freelancing like be taught?
You don't have a business course? We studied a little bit in the business course.
A little bit, but the business course was like actual business, like not like the business of design. We had a great teacher. If that's the class that was supposed to be covered, well, maybe I missed it. So that's on me.
You wouldn't have missed anything.
Yeah.
Freelance is a hard thing to teach because like so many times it's like how did I get the jobs that I have freelance? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, yeah, I put ads up on like Kijiji and other socials. Like the last agency I worked for, I had a friend who worked there and they needed a photo editor. And then she was like, oh, Eric can do this. And then they needed some other stuff and I did it. The current freelance job I have now, a friend works there in their comms department and said, hey, Eric can do this. And the first big freelance jobs I had, which were for restaurants, I worked at those restaurants. Mm-hmm. So, and they needed a photographer and they needed menu layouts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So in terms of like if I was teaching that course, like how to get freelance work, I mean, I don't have a super hot freelance aptitude, I guess, but that's mm-hmm. how all my work has come in. Just like that.
I see. Yeah.
But maybe there's some value in that, like how to get contracts.
Right. Because like me personally, I was fresh out of high school when I entered the program. I know like some students were like a little older and like had experience freelancing and then went to school. So, you know, there's just like, I feel like this program has a different mix of people in terms of experience and like, I guess a lot, like some people don't know this stuff, right? So that I see the value in it, at least for me.
Yeah, you know, I'm happy you bring this up because yeah, like there's a huge age difference and some people already have, like I could think of at least one person who already had a degree in design. It was industrial design, but it's still design. And I mean, a lot of those principles and elements are common. And then when I went to college, I was in my mid-20s. I already had a university degree. I had already worked a little bit of freelance and stuff. You know, I'd already worked a 9-to-5. And so some of the courses I was taking, I was like, look, I really don't need this. This is a waste of my time. Mm-hmm. It's a waste of everyone's time. I'm taking up space in a classroom for people who need this. But then there was other things where other people who had been like design geeks from birth were sitting in typography one, like, I don't need this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to do a better job of, maybe there needs to be some kind of like more elective based, like not everyone takes the same courses.
Right. Cause I remember my electives being, one of them was psychology of sex or something. I don't know. I just had to. So
yeah. Yeah. You're, why can't there be an elective that is like freelancing for creatives?
Exactly. Yeah, definitely.
Because already the curriculum, as you say, is freaking packed. Like,
mm-hmm.
like you've got so much and such a wide variety that to add another core course is kind of like more stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know what you'd cut.
You see what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's great. And I think everyone would benefit from that. Mm-hmm. And so many instructors could teach that. Like so many instructors could be tapped to do other things. And I think a lot of them would appreciate it. I know I would appreciate like having maybe one other like different course that was maybe a little bit more fun, a little bit less structured. Mm-hmm. Like everyone can kind of just relax a little on something.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
It's a good idea. So speaking of, it's gonna, I don't know if I can do anything about it, but
it's okay. The world knows though.
Yeah. So I remember when you were a student, You didn't worry too much about exactly what the job brief was.
Yeah.
You never try to just explore things. And, you know, the truth is, like, I actually loved that about your work. Sometimes it made it difficult to, like, grade because...
Right.
So why don't you tell me what it's like to be Gabe when you're reading a rubric?
I didn't think about it too much in terms of, like, being put in a box. Of course, like, we're creatives, that's our job, so I didn't, like, forget that. And also, like, I kind of used assignments as opportunities to kind of do what I wanted, like, what I've been longing to do, like, a new skill or a new look or anything. Like, I used them as, like, I guess, like, I don't know, like, I just used what I wanted to do. Like, if I'm inspired by something, then, this project is going to be the baby of that inspiration. And just basically have the assignments serve you as well at the same time, but, like, get the grade, or at least, like, you know, you obviously have to get the good grade. But I wasn't worried too much because I was confident. I don't know. I knew my work. So I know that's super personal, but I guess all I could say is that, yeah, have the assignments serve you, like, have them, like, benefit you in some way instead of just stressing you out, you know? So have a little fun with it, even though your teachers might hate you for it, but at least you had fun and you got the grade. Assignment's over, the stress is done, on to the next. I don't know if that made sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. Do you ever feel like, did you ever feel like a tug between, like, getting an A and kind of compromising your vision and getting a B and
No, to me, I was never a grade person. You know, I was more like, I'm proud of what I did. You know,
you felt like that compromise was there. You just didn't care.
Yeah, that's just me, though. So.
There's a lot of research about whether or not grades actually motivate students. My personal findings, just as an observer, are that for some people they do, and for other people they don't.
Right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's weird because for those who like the benefits. Well, actually, I don't even know. Like, are the benefits of grades, of getting good grades but not quite doing what you want, are they better than the benefits of doing what you want at the cost of your grades?
I mean, at the end of the day, will your employers look at your grades?
Nope.
Exactly. They're going to look at what you've come up with, right?
Mm-hmm. So we're going to look at your work.
Yeah, that was what's more important to me. It's like, I want to produce work that I want to do in the future, but also by playing by the rules. That's how I approached it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, it does get to the point where, you know, the client is paying you. And, right. You know, if we think of the teacher-client sort of mirroring each other, you do have to end up delivering usually what the client wants.
Right.
I mean, unless you're like Paul Rand or something. There's that famous Paul Rand quote. I will tell you what you need and I will make it for you and you will pay me. I certainly can't get away with that.
Right. There's a great YouTube channel for people in the industry. It's called The Future. I think it's a great resource. Oh yeah, there you go. Yeah, I just wanted to share that. I don't know.
I definitely recommend that people look at that. You know, I became aware of it. I wrote a guest lecture where I talk about how to price your freelance work.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was talking about how to price yourself as a designer. And basically, it's based on how much the client trusts you determines mm-hmm. how much they feel like paying you. And then somebody pointing me to there's like a video of the guy from Future on a whiteboard, and he's basically mm-hmm. saying the exact same thing.
Yeah.
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 You know, which is kind of interesting because I don't like rubrics, but I write them because some students are not comfortable without that framework.
For sure.
But then I'll get people asking me, like, can I ignore this framework? And I usually just say, yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Because of people like you, Gabriel, I learned that, like, just change it for them so that they can get good grades and do what they want to do, which everybody benefits from. So you
sound real bad.
No, it's the opposite. You've left a positive impact. I mean, I don't know how many years I will teach. I don't know how many people I will teach, but every single one of them who is like, is there some way we can change these requirements so that I can do like something I want to do? I'll always think about people like you and be like, yeah, we're going to find a way. So.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, man. It matters. Thank you. It matters. I would be curious to know if you have any ideas about how you can strike that balance between flexibility in requirements for school and also, like, because here's the thing, if we just say, like, do whatever you want, then some people are going to hand in something that, and you can't pass, right? It's just not. But then, like, I'll give you an example. I remember you doing one assignment where you kept trying to do it in
Premiere.
I had to teach After Effects. Like, it's,
yeah,
that was the course. And actually, like, even allowing people to do video, like, we were supposed to focus on motion graphics. Mm-hmm. So even allowing people to do video was me kind of like not breaking the rules, but like going a little bit off the map. I don't know.
I'm sorry if I gave you a hard time.
You definitely did not. Okay. It's not that big a deal.
Okay, that's good to hear.
Yeah. Oh, I talked to Jordan yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did he tell you?
No.
No. I was just talking about how, like, he was talking about the social scene, and he said he's missing being on campus. And I was like, well, you kind of always sat like alone. I know everyone was cool with you, but I'm surprised to hear you say that because you didn't seem to be super social. And he said, well, I really liked hanging out with Gabe. So I was like, oh, yeah, that's true. What did you think of, like, social aspects of college and student life?
It's definitely like high school all over again.
Really?
Yeah, you know, but everyone's a stranger. Like, it's such a drastic change in terms of, like, the volume of people.
Mm.
So that was, I'm not really a social person. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, if I do find a good friend, then I'll stick with them. So that's why I stuck with Jordan.
When you say it was like high school all over again, do you think like, what are your thoughts of taking a year off? Cause you did mention you were 17.
Yeah.
Would you jump right in next time or would you take your time?
No, I was actually forced to go to school.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I wanted to take that year off and just save money and try to figure things out. But, you know, parents, so I had to obey. Yeah.
Would you do a longer program?
I would if I had taken that gap year. Yeah, I would have definitely.
You would have done longer.
Yeah.
What if you could, like, nothing stopping you? You're 17 again and there's nothing, like, money's not an issue, time's, like, not an issue. Would you do a 3 or 4 year?
I would. I actually took a three. I extended my program, so I did 3 years.
Oh, so are you still in it right now?
No, I graduated. I was supposed to graduate like 2 years ago.
Okay.
But yeah, I had the extension because, again, it was too much for me and I just couldn't. I wasn't mentally prepared.
Oh, so I didn't realize that. So you, okay, so when did you first enroll?
I first enrolled in 2017.
Oh.
And I graduated in 2020.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Okay. And so you just had, like, you had work and stuff and you just had other things going on?
Yeah. Well, it was mostly the schoolwork. It was like, I had 7 courses. But a big part of why is because of my commute. I had to commute 1.5 hours one way every day.
Wow.
And that took a lot of time away from thinking about projects and doing projects. You know, mm-hmm. So
yep.
it was a more specific situation, but even if I didn't have that and I had an easier way to get into school, like 7 courses and have each assignment, like, do every day of the week was, to me, a little overwhelming coming from high school, at least. Like, I won't know, like, how older people that have experience in the industry would feel about it, but to someone that's fresh, it was a little overwhelming, but stuck at 3 though.
Well, that's good. You know, I will say, I came from university into college, mm-hmm. and so did two of my friends while I was there. And I remember, like, in the first like 3 months, I was like, are you guys thinking this is way more work than university, just mm-hmm. in terms of the number of things? Mm-hmm. And they're just like, yes, this is like, I've done more in the last 2 weeks than I did in my entire undergrad.
Right.
Yeah. So there's definitely like a large volume of work, but there's just so much, like there's so much software to learn and there's so many concepts to learn.
Right.
And kind of the only way to really learn, like no one can really teach you how to understand how the software works, right? Like you can watch a tutorial and that will teach you how to do one thing, mm-hmm. but you really won't have that sort of knowledge that it takes to like problem solve something. So if you see something in your brain and you're like, how do I do this with After Effects? Mm-hmm. You know, if all you know how to do is watch tutorials and you can't find the tutorial for that, you're sunk.
Then you're screwed. Yeah.
You're sunk. The only way to learn the software is to just, I mean, I love YouTube tutorials. I'll use, if I can find one, I'll damn right, I'm going to use the one. The only way to get to the point where you can figure it out on your own is just to just use it and use it and use it and use it.
Right.
And I think that's part of why the design college is so intense in terms of the number of things.
Right. Is there even anyone who's mastered all the Adobe Suite programs?
Doubt it.
I feel like learning the programs themselves should be a course. I was lucky that I had some education prior to college about like Adobe Illustrator and Photoshop and Lightroom and InDesign and all that. But there were definitely some people who just started in the beginning of the program about like learning about like Adobe.
Where did you get that prior education?
High school. My high school actually was it was known for like arts and design, I guess, or at least being forward with that field.
That's cool. Do you want to give them a shout out or no?
Marshall McLuhan Catholic Secondary School.
Oh, Marshall McLuhan. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. We had a really big contact lab and lots of Macs, so that helped a lot.
That's awesome. I mean, obviously Marshall is like a staple of the Canadian design scene. I mean,
right.
It's famous, OCAD, everything. The media is the message, right?
Yeah.
I wonder then if there's like room for some kind of like a summer course you take before you go in, a software crash course or...
Ooh, that's a really good idea. Yeah. Even for someone that knows, like, you know, sharpen your skills, right?
Yeah, it's optional and, you know, it could be entirely online. Like, here are simple, clearly written assignments.
Because I feel like if you don't know the software, then you won't feel confident at all.
Right? No.
You won't know what to do, right? So it's essential. How I see it, at least.
Yeah, there's a business opportunity for you.
Teaching Adobe.
Yeah, yeah, man. Hey, I took a Premiere course. We didn't take Premiere in college, but I took it when I was working for a law firm. I was working on as an in-house designer, mm-hmm. and they wanted videos edited, and so they paid for a five, 8-hour day course. In Premiere, and I think it was like $1,800. So
wow.
Yeah, so I mean there's money there, and if you could sell one as like the student version, might be a business plan.
How was that though? Like how much did you learn from those 5 days?
I'm a pretty good, I mean, like the only thing that really allows me to succeed in life, it's not my looks, it's not my personality, it's not even my brains, it's my ability to learn things reasonably quickly.
Right.
So like, I didn't need it.
Mm-hmm.
I could have figured it out, but mm-hmm. I'm not also not going to say no to free education. Like, you know, I would not pay for like a program before school where I learned the software,
mm-hmm.
especially because there's so many tools out there already when it comes to learning the software.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had a computer in my bedroom since I was 5 years old.
Yeah.
And not everyone has had that, right?
Yeah. Definitely.
So, but that's just it. Like that just boils back down to this idea of a little more customization in the curriculum would benefit everyone.
Mm-hmm. Maybe like 5 set courses and 2 learning electives, you know, about either the software or, again, like the freelancing thing we talked about. I don't know. There's probably more to be like taught, but I don't know. I don't know if you could do anything about it, but it's just cool to think about it like that.
It is cool to think about it like that. There, yeah. Especially because there's an ongoing push-pull. Like, I have so many students come to me and say, we want to learn the software. We want to learn the software. But like from a sort of the standpoint of a professional, knowing how to use the software is not what's going to make you, it's not going to, what's going to give you the opportunity to succeed in the industry, because anyone can use software. So it's like, can you think creatively and can you execute and can you meet deadlines and can you work collaboratively? Can you brainstorm? Do you know how to engage a client? Do you know how to build a pitch? Do you know how to ideate and create and prototype? And like, these things are not done in software. So, so everyone has this anxiety over learning the software. And the, and from an instructor's standpoint, it's like, you don't need to learn the software. But I'm also thinking like, however like great of an idea you have in your mind as a designer, if you can't figure out how to produce it in the software, it's dead in the water.
Exactly. So
it's really tough.
Yeah. Even for some assignments, like you had to, if you wanted to do something, like you had to learn it on your own, you know?
Yeah. With After Effects, I cannot teach every single thing that people are like, I want to do this. I want to do this. And it's like, yeah, you got to learn that on your own because,
yeah,
because we have 14 weeks here. I can do 14 tutorials. And even then, some of them take a day or two.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably the single biggest thing I struggle with the most. Software versus theory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe I scoff at it, but maybe there is room for a four-year degree. Maybe there is enough this year.
Wait, no, it's not Catherine anymore. Who's the new one?
Lori LaBelle.
Lori, take notes.
Well, no, Lori's great, and actually, she is actually hip to that. Like, she also identifies that there's this ongoing. I mean, I think any instructor knows that there's this ongoing pull between the two, between the software use and the theory. The other thing is that the knowledge market, the free knowledge market, also already does a good job of software training. So mm-hmm. if you need to learn the software, you can just basically binge on YouTube for a month and get familiar with the software.
Right.
But like ongoing critiques, talking, like having that one-on-one with your peers and an instructor is one thing that the universities and colleges still give that aren't freely available.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's going to be a natural bias towards kind of elevating those as the main offering of the schools. What do you think about that?
Sorry, rephrase the question.
Sure. Let's just pretend the schools look at it this way.
Okay.
There's two things. There's theory, like design mm-hmm. theory.
Right.
And then there's software.
Okay.
So it's like, okay, so if we teach the people the theory, then they'll have these amazing ideas and they'll go home and they'll learn the software and they'll create them.
Mm-hmm.
Then students will say, well, you didn't teach us the software, right? So mm-hmm. then the instructors will say, well, why should we teach you the software? There's a whole world of free software training out there. And, you know, the ideas are the same. The theory is the same for every single student, but the software knowledge is not the same for every single student. So mm-hmm. we can't teach every single student exactly what they need to do. You mm-hmm. have to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the choice. I don't know. It's tough.
It's tough. I think that pre-college software course could really be handy.
It might be. And I mean, I'm sure it would be profitable. And if people are wanting it, then why wouldn't you offer it?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to find out it already exists. Did you ever do any of the design competitions or anything like that?
I did one in high school. Yeah. I did the Skills Canada trade something and I entered for design and I won I was competing with the province. I went to the convention, stayed at a hotel. But that's it, basically. That's all the design competing that I've done.
How come you didn't, I mean, you had success the first time you tried and you just didn't, you didn't want to do it anymore? And
No, I did it, but I just didn't make it to the next round, I guess. Oh. So I made it to the second round, but not the next one. Yeah.
Did you do the XD Jam? I don't remember.
No, I didn't.
No, let's see.
What's the XD Jam?
What was the XD Jam? Man, yeah. You never came to my classes, did you?
No, I did. What do you mean?
We the Adobe XD Jam was like creating, prototyping an app in XD in 2 days. And actually students from your class won for the province. Yeah. Yeah, they met the CEO of Adobe and
You Emily, talked about this in class?
Like several times. Emily, I think it was Emily Little, Julia Lang, and Nicholas Alvarez.
Oh.
Yeah, they won for the province. They beat Sheridan. They beat OCAD, the four-year program, the three-year program at Sheridan, and the three-year program at Humber. They beat Seneca. Yeah, they it was incredible, and they did it, you know,
in 2 days.
2 days, yeah.
Wow.
So, yep.
How did I miss this?
I don't know.
You were
asleep.
Yeah. No, I don't sleep in your class.
Yeah. No, you're great. and then also, Tony and Gigi entered a Spotify competition, in the MediaTek 2, the AfterFest class. Instead of doing the project, they entered a competition, right, which we just changed the assignment requirements to match the competition.
The contest. Yeah.
Yeah. And they entered it and, they didn't win, but what they produced was like incredible. And, we were, you know, they were facing people who were in like their third year of animation and they had done like 3 months. So just the fact that they got on the scoreboard is like a huge win.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Wow. I still keep in touch with Tony.
Oh, he was so super talented. Like, yeah, he's doing good.
Yeah, he's doing good so far.
That's good. Hey.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I don't know.
All right. Well, I mean, I won't take up any of your time. I think it's been helpful.
Okay. No, thank you for having me, though.
Yeah, if you want to talk.
It's been an honor.
Oh my goodness. No, it's been a pleasure to have you. And you know, if you want to talk again, maybe we can get deeper into. I still feel unsatisfied about the whole doing what you want to do versus doing what you're being asked to do.
I'll think like more about that.
I think there's so much there.
Yeah.
There's so much there. And it's such I think it's like the tip of the iceberg for a problem underlying education system in general, not just design, but everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because if people are motivated to do something, why would you let, I mean, I don't know. It's tough. Like, cause I'm thinking like, well, there's learning objectives and they're there for a reason because they're the result of industry consultation and the experience of professionals, you know, and the government.
Mm-hmm.
So they seem important, but if someone's going to fail, who's talented, or someone's going to get a C who's talented because they didn't meet the requirements, but they demonstrated extreme ability, how is that helpful?
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely. I remember spending $200 on getting something made and got a 30% on the assignment.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. So that's why I kind of stopped giving a fuck about grades.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do you want to talk about that?
No, not really.
Oh, man. Dude.
Yeah.
Painful memories.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, you know, actually, I have a memory of an instructor telling me like where a good printer was, and so I went to that printer, and I had my files, and I was like, I'm from a suburban area, so I went into the city on like my day off, and I went in, and I was like, I actually kind of dressed up because I didn't want to like embarrass anyone,
right?
And I went in, and I was like, here's my InDesign file, it's properly packaged, you'll find a high quality, you know, actually PDFX export. and it's all ready to go. And they were just like, oh, we don't print that here. And I was like, what? And they're like, we don't print that here. And I was like, okay. So I went to FedEx and printed it. And then the instructor was like, oh, where'd you get this printed? FedEx, it looks bad. And I was like, what?
What the place he said doesn't, like.
They told me to get lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. So I kind of. But the man, that's. I don't like hearing what you just told me.
Did we have accessible printers in the school? Yeah, we did. The printer in F.
It was right outside my classroom. Yeah. You never came to.
Not a lot of people know about it though, right?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know, man. Like I also think that that's something else that could be. Like that equipment is expensive and printers are like they suck, like they never work. But I think that's something else that the schools could get better at is like having printing more accessible to students. Like you should, like if you want to talk about in the real world and all that, you should have printers available for students to walk up to and use.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is also something else because I have printed, like one time I needed brochures and it was just like an 8-page thing. So 4 pages folded and stapled, or maybe it was 12 pages. Anyways, it was a shitload of booklets. Mm-hmm. And I stayed in the office like overnight and I printed thousands of sheets and I hand trimmed and hand stapled all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that kind of thing. I don't think that kind of thing happens in the school. I don't know.
No,
but you don't have the equipment. You couldn't do it if you wanted to.
Yeah, exactly.
That equipment's not there.
Yeah. And also like even the people running the printer were barely there.
And not helpful.
No, not really.
No,
but the service was really helpful though, because that was my go-to printer. It was the best price.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
You know. Printing is expensive.
It's fucking expensive, man.
Oh yeah, I used to work for a printer, and you know what? Their margins aren't great either.
Really?
Not really. Like they're not awful. Like they make a living, but right. A printer is like a printers are expensive, man, and they break, and they're too complex to fix. So most printers actually don't even buy their printer. Their most printing companies don't buy their printers. They lease them. Especially like a small mom and pops, like you go in and it's like, you know, it's like 600 square feet and there's like a counter and there's a big long printer and it smells like toner and that's like the whole experience.
Yeah,
those guys are not, they don't purchase them because they're tens of thousands of dollars. They're leasing them. And then the ink is expensive, toner is expensive.
Oh, for sure. The paper, especially if it's a big printer.
Yeah, but. Yeah. But that's the kind of cost that, like, you can show it to the, like, if you hold the paper in your hand and you show it to the client and you're like, this one's 2 cents a sheet, this one's 10 cents a sheet, they don't feel like you're messing with them, right? Like, they see that paper, they feel the difference. But like, when you say it costs this much to print a sheet, for them, they don't see the rent, they don't see the repairs, they don't see the cost of the toner. They don't see the cost of the RIP software. They don't see the cost of the network setup that allows the files to come. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So paper is like the one thing actually that you can kind of sell. Like it's like the one upsell that the client is like, okay, yeah, I want the nice paper.
You got me thinking about the office just now.
Yeah, little Thunder Mifflin. Yeah. Somehow I don't feel like they had the good stuff. Yeah, cutting machines are expensive and labor intensive because you have to stand there and do it. So I used to like stand there and cut like a 300 page textbook. I would trim all those pages to fit.
For one book?
Oh, no. I did like several hundred 300 page textbooks.
In one cut?
No. Oh, no.
That's what I meant.
Oh, I'm sorry. No. So a 300 page book, I feel like it was like 100 sheet max. I don't remember. But and it would suck though, because if you screwed up, then like, and someone like ran their hands along the edge of a spine, it would be all like bumpy and gross. And that's just because this printer that I worked for you know, was taking the biggest jobs he could, which makes sense, but it's not, it wasn't, you know, we couldn't actually handle it.
Yeah.
But he's doing great. He's got a bigger spot now, so
that's good. That's good. I need a link to those, by the way.
Those what? Those printers. Textbooks?
No, oh, printers. Those printers? Yeah. Okay. I'll
share them. Yeah, he's it's actually Hometown Printing is what it's called. It's in Port Perry, and husband and wife own it, and they're photographers as well, and they do marketing. They're great to work for. The Tripps, TRIPP. They're great to work for. I got hired somewhere else.
Do you think printers are going to be in business in the future still? Or?
You mean like Vistaprint's going to gobble them all up?
Yeah, you know, like I have this book here. It says print is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's true? Because everything's like digital now, or is there still like an appreciation? How I feel about it, I still appreciate print, but by the way this industry is going, do you think print is actually going to die?
My history degree will kick in here. So when libraries like became popular, people said, oh well, bookstores are going to go out of business. And when radio became popular, people said, oh, no one's going to buy books anymore. And when TV became popular, people said, oh, no one's going to listen to the radio anymore. And then when home video came out, people said, no one's going to go to the theaters anymore. And then when streaming came out, well, they actually did put home video.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
but that's the only one that was correct. And I mean, let's face it, Netflix is a better business model than.
Sure.
Although, you know, now that I think of it, I don't know how to rent a movie.
Yeah.
I don't know how to rent a movie. Like sometimes YouTube will be like, so, okay. So when it comes to print, I mean, someone's still got to print the, like, you're always going to need a label on the bottle of ketchup.
Got it.
You're always going to need, I think books aren't going away. Like, book sales have not slowed down, and we'll see. Maybe your generation is the last generation who can remember a time when books were your only option for consuming that kind of content.
Right.
So we'll see what happens when like your age group and my age group has kids, when they're the first thing they get in their hand is an iPad, not a Dr. Seuss.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Yeah.
But I mean, even if it is like in terms of us as graphic designers, I mean, books are a very small part of
printing. The
graphic design industry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Magazines are different.
Mm.
I wouldn't be surprised if magazines die out.
Really?
In like 30 or 40 years. Yeah, man. Like I used to read like Popular Mechanics and stuff, but now it's like I can just like not even like the equivalent. Like I wouldn't go to Gizmodo, but I feel like that fix, like that quick fix of content, is like for me Reddit, for other people social.
Mm-hmm.
So more it's not the media. It's not that I feel like the media is replaced. I feel like the biological need to waste time on something that's slightly pleasurable. Is filled by other things for me. So that it's not like print is replaced by digital versions of the same thing, but like the hit, that like that dopamine hit is being replaced by something different. How about you?
I was definitely thinking that print was going to die until you mentioned the ketchup bottle label, because I forgot about like billboard signs and, you know, other marketing stuff.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. There's still built digital, like, menus might go online, maybe.
It's weird.
We'll see.
I've had a menu where I had to go online, and it was weird.
Yeah, with COVID.
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, you're supposed to spend $500 on tablets. Like, think about that. If you have four people at a table in a restaurant, and $2,000 worth of tablets, you got to sell a lot of food before you pay for that, and that's just one table.
Yeah.
A lot of the fast food has gone to kiosks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that will change. One thing I think we should talk about in the discussion of is print dead? How much will that matter to graphic designers
if print dies? What do you think? I don't know. What can you tell? You have more experience.
Well, what do you think?
I don't know. Shit. I feel like there's going to be like purists for sure, you know? It's like still appreciate like print as a whole, but I feel like most of the people are like, the jobs at least that are being available are all digital, you know, websites, ad campaigns, email campaigns, you know, all the work that's being like, that's available right now is digital, for at least what I'm seeing, you know. So yeah, that's why I had to ask.
I would say, if I look at the film industry, it's not a direct comparison, but you have people like Christopher Nolan who will only shoot on film. And then you have other people like Lucas and the guy who did Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. I think he's a digital advocate, you know, and they have different uses and they produce a slightly different product. And maybe there's room for them to be side by side. I have a feeling that money will be the ultimate determinant. Like if, as long as people like Christopher Nolan keep putting out $800 million Batman movies, they'll let him shoot on film if he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And as soon as enough people insist on shooting on film and they bomb, they'll be pushed into digital. But with print world, it's kind of like, if the billboard gets printed on paper or if it goes up on a digital screen, in terms of the designer, it doesn't make a difference, right?
Right.
Will there be less?
I guess, yeah, you're right. Yeah. But what about like designing books and all, like type and all that stuff for print?
Well, there'll still be need for typography designers, like people who make type faces.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like editorial might change, but somebody still needs to do the typographic layouts on a web page.
Mm-hmm.
I will definitely miss editorial. I think there's always going to be, like, in the same way that, you know, vinyl never went away, there's always going to be a market for like a sexy book, right? Like, I don't think it's going to go away. I don't think that's going to go away, but I think there might be less of them. And you know what? Let's face it. Most people buy these books and they never read them. I have so many books on my bookshelf that I've read once.
Should it be eliminated as a whole in terms of like environmental aspect?
I am not a scientist. I do not know. We'd need to know, like, what is the e-waste versus paper waste? I mean,
got it.
You know, I mean, I think people probably buy a new cell phone too often.
Mm.
You know, when all you really probably need to do is change the battery and you get another happy couple of years out of it. People buy a new phone.
But it's not their fault. Like, the manufacturer could be messing with you. You know what I mean?
Oh, well, we know they were. Look at what happened with the iPhone.
I'm talking exactly about the iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, there was a class action lawsuit and, you know, that all of that is tricky because there's all the... They change standards and, you know, so now everyone who has, like, Apple wants to reduce e-waste, but they changed their plug standards. So now...
they will buy new plugs and produce new plugs.
And everyone has to throw out the old ones, even though they work perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like, it's the wider question of, like, if there's something better, like what is the opportunity cost? What is the cost of adopting something better? And after that, you paid that cost, was it worth adopting something that's better?
Mm.
And these are big questions that I do not have answers to.
We'll save them for another time.
Yeah. it's getting late. Gabe, thank you for your time.
Oh, man. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this.